Okay, so somehow we've already reached the end of series one, and joining me for today's episode is Tyrone Huntley. Very exciting. Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good, and you're currently in rehearsals for the Watermills production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
I am, yes.
And how's that going? Who are you playing in it?
I'm playing Lysander.
Okay.
One of the lovers who gets lost in the forest and, you know... I was going to say poison, but it's not poison. It's like he gets a spell put on him with some flower juice. And
I love how you're giving me the plot of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Some people might not have seen
Some people might not have seen it. And how is it going? When do you open?
We open on the 10th of May.
Okay.
And we run until the 16th of June.
And you've just done this kind of back-to-back with a play... at Southwark as well, called Angry.
Yeah.
And both of them are kind of like quite stark contrast from the stuff that people might know you for.
Yes.
These are much smaller things.
Yeah.
Southwark, you did it in the large, but it was still...
No, we did it in the little.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And gosh.
The space was absolutely tiny.
And obviously the Watermill's only 200, 300 seats.
Yeah.
So what's that like, going from these huge spaces to...
It's, more than anything, it's exposing... because, you know, when you're on a big stage, in the Savoy Theatre or the Prince of Wales or something like that, and, you know, the audience is out there, but for the most part, it's just a black box, nothing. You can see the first few rows.
It's like a void.
So you sort of sometimes forget that they're there. So you're just performing and it's just, you know, the same show that you perform every night. But whereas when I was working in the Southwark Playhouse in the little space, you can literally look every single person in the eye and, you know, see their reactions on such a small scale because they're there in front of you. And it does definitely sort of affect your performance and inform your performance. Luckily, the play Angry was more of a, it was a selection of six monologues. So we were talking to the audience like they were the other side of the conversation, essentially.
So we could
use their reactions to inform that particular performance on the day, which is brilliant because, you know, there's always that thing that people say about acting, oh, don't get bored doing the same thing every night. And this was a perfect... opportunity to change things up every night. Obviously, we had to stick within the things that we've been directed to do, but you could feel the audience out and see what they sort of were responding to and work with it. So it was really, really cool to be able to do that.
So you've just done Angry. You're doing Midsummer Night's Dream, as we said, both smaller productions. Was it a conscious decision to do these smaller venues after having done, because, you know, the shows you've done so far are much, much bigger, as you say, you're playing to this huge void. And then in succession, you've done these two shows, which are in smaller houses. I just wonder, part of me kind of, as an onlooker, kind of goes, oh, are you consciously seeking out a different kind of experience?
Yeah, I think so. The fact that I'm thinking me and my agent, but the fact that we sort of decided to sort of go into these smaller venues is not necessarily just to go into smaller venues, but it's more with a view of getting more experience doing plays without music, without singing. And in order to do that, you sort of have to start small. Learn from people who have been doing it for a long, long time in order to sort of build up that rep of plays that you've been in so that the bigger venues will sort of take you more seriously as an actor that can act like primarily and not just sort of rely on my, you know, singing voice or dancing or whatever.
And was Angry your first play?
It was my first professional play, yes. Which was very scary because I felt like I was being thrown in the deep end because there was only two of us in the company.
Yeah.
So not only because it was a small space was it exposing, but, you know, for 98% of the time, it was just me on the stage on my own.
And for those people who don't know, it was a series of six monologues, as you said, but there was you and another girl in the cast and you alternated which monologues you did every night.
Yeah.
So you might not have been doing... You didn't do the same show two times in a row.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd swap every night. And so we knew what the schedule was going to be. So it wasn't like a flip of the coin like some productions have done. But it was still, you know, we had to learn the whole play, every single word of the play.
When you
looked at the script, it was just...
And did you ever just look at the... I've forgotten the actress's name.
Georgie Henley.
Did you ever look at Georgie and just think, I wouldn't have made that choice, Georgia.
No, actually, the opposite. We rehearsed separately. So for 3 weeks, we didn't see any of the decisions that either of us had made. It was just one-on-one with the director. And then about 3 or 4 days before we went into the theatre, we had like our show and tell.
Uh-huh. So you did all six for her and she did all six for you.
Yeah. Wow. And it was one of those moments where, oh, I wish I'd have made that decision. Uh-huh. Or, oh gosh, that's really funny. I didn't even think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for the first few days after we'd seen each other's show and tell. It was trying not to steal the ideas.
Uh-huh.
That was the
to commit to your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just, no, I made this decision with Max, the director, and we, mm-hmm. you know, I believe in it, and just stay with it, and mm-hmm. you know. And that was what was great about the production, is that the audience came, if they came twice, which they were encouraged to do, and most mm. people did, they saw two completely different interpretations mm-hmm. of the piece, which is, you know, the words on the page, everyone reads them in such a different way.
Yeah.
And to see them performed in such sometimes completely contrasting ways was really interesting.
Is there anything about you which thinks that's a bit gimmicky? To do,
I think, 100%.
Yeah,
I think that's, you know, in this day and age where there's so much choice to go and see things at the theatre, and it's getting more and more expensive as well. And because we were at the Southwark Playhouse, which is such an incredible theatre, but it's not in town, so like uh-huh. tourist wise, people aren't going to come out. You know, if they're in town and they walk past Les Mis, they're just going to go there. Why mm-hmm. would they come all the way out to Southwark? So you have to sort of entice people and be inventive and get them to come and see it. And, you know, we sold out a lot,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't think we would. And we did. And I think that was because people were interested in mm-hmm. coming to see two different interpretations.
It's a great idea. It's a really good idea.
And it is a bit gimmicky, but it worked. And it was, you know, a theatrical exploration of something a little bit different.
I love a gimmick. I love a gimmick. And I think, especially as now I've gone on to the other side, onto the creative side mm-hmm. of things, I know that a good gimmick is kind of what it's all about. You Absolutely. Spend your time trying to come up with things that are going to entice people and make them come and see the show. Yeah. So you've done these two plays
mm-hmm.
and it was a conscious choice to do things without music, which has kind of been the foundation of your career so far, I guess. So have you found what you're looking for?
I think what was good about Angry, because Midsummer Night's Dream is a little bit different because it's acto muso. There's music in it.
Okay.
And I do sing a song, mm-hmm. very, very short. But Angry was different because in a confidence way, it was nice to sort of have that trust to go, look, you're known for being a singer, actor,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to trust you with this piece that has no music in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just words and it's just telling a story. And it was just great to sort of be trusted with that and know that I can act. That's what I do. That's what I'm here for. And singing, you know, is acting through song.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great to know that people think that I can do that. And because I think that I can do that, but it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's easy me saying, oh, I'm an actor.
Yeah.
But when, you know, there's this stigma attached to musical theatre actors that they're only there to sort of, you know.
I think acting through song is possibly one of the most difficult things to do for an actor.
Yeah.
I spend so much time, obviously, when I'm not directing, mm-hmm. watching theatre or working with students.
Yeah.
And the skill of being able to be instinctive and impulsive mm-hmm. throughout a piece of music which has a tempo, which mm-hmm. has a rhythm set Absolutely. For you, which has a melody. You have to go where that is.
Yeah.
You know, but to keep it instinctive.
And still be able to make choices within uh-huh. those restrictions. Uh-huh. I think it's really, really difficult mm-hmm. when you approach a song for the first time. And I think, you know, because musicals are so commercial and they're so, and you know, they sell well and they have catchy tunes in them. Some people, and I'm not saying everyone, but some people write them off as just being, you know, that bracket that we have, entertainment, mm-hmm. as opposed to like art. And I completely think the opposite, but it's sort of nice to sort of go into acting in a straight play and be respected as much as I am in the musical theatre uh-huh. world, in inverted commas. So it's been nice to sort of have that confidence boost.
Good. That's fantastic. And you spoke a little bit about how kind of music, you know, is kind of was has formed the foundation of the basis of your career so far. But I just want to talk a little bit about how that journey started for you. And maybe we'll kind of go back to the beginning and talk about where were you born?
I was born in Lincoln, in the East Midlands.
Okay.
Up north, as most people would say, down here.
And do you have a musical family?
Not at all.
Right.
No. My mum is a nurse, and my dad was a factory worker.
Okay.
And there's no sort of... no one in my family had a musical vocation, as it were, but we were all very much, you know, we'd listen to music all the time. Whenever we'd do chores, there'd be music blazing in the front room.
And what music? What kind of music?
Oh, gosh, such a wide sort of selection. Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, Mariah Carey was a big one, Whitney Houston. But then you also had, like, Kate Bush and Bob Marley and, you know, so many sort of different
genres.
Genres sort of coming together. But it was great. It was just, So although it wasn't a vocationally music household, there was always music playing.
There was always music playing, but was there always musicals playing? Was there theatre?
No.
No.
No, so, not at all, really. The only musicals, really, that I knew as a kid, and this wasn't even as a young... when I was younger, it was more like when I got into teenage, it was more your The Wiz.
Right.
And the original movie of Fame was a favourite of mine, even though it had a lot of profanity in it, swearing. Mm-hmm. And what was another one? Little Shop. I really enjoyed. Like, I got that DVD when I was like 14 or 15. But there was none of. So I didn't grow up with like The Sound of Music.
Yeah. Or those classic MGM films.
Yeah.
Films,
yeah, no, like that. Nothing like that. It was more the like modern sounding musicals that could
and
pass,
soulful. By
soulful,
the sound
yeah,
of thing,
yeah, soulful, but that could sort of pass as pop music,
right?
Essentially.
Yeah, got you.
So I didn't really grow up listening to those classic books.
And so, how do you go from Lincoln, no real interest in musicals, to being nominated for an Olivier for a musical?
Well, it's not even that I didn't have the interest; it just wasn't. Like I said, I didn't grow up around it, so I wasn't into sport.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed, and I didn't really enjoy like. As I'm doing now, I'm suffering quite badly with hay fever, so I wasn't an outdoorsy kind of kid.
It's horrible, like, isn't it? It's the worst.
Yeah, climbing trees and stuff. It was horrible. It was really, really bad. So I didn't go out much. So singing, I just enjoyed singing, and singing was something that I just did sort of as my hobby. And
do you remember the first musical you saw on stage? Or the first play you saw on stage?
No.
Really?
I remember... I'd always been involved as a kid at school in sort of like the drama club.
Mm-hmm.
I do the school play and all that kind of stuff. And it was through that I realised that I enjoyed doing it. And, you know, I made a lot of friends through it. And my mum took me to a local sort of kids and dram club.
Mm-hmm.
That I did like once a week and stuff, which was fun. But again, that was more just sort of seeing friends, and I would never really took it seriously as something that I would be interested in doing for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, you know, do plays and put on musicals and like showcases and stuff like that, which was a lot of fun.
It's funny, actually. I spoke to you on the way here before we started recording, but I spoke to a couple of people about you before we did the interview, and they both said, because they just happen to know you, that you actually, for a long time, were quite happy to take or leave a career in the arts. And it wasn't something, even when you were training, I was actually speaking to your dance teacher about you. But even when you were training, you were kind of not entirely sure whether it was going to be something that you pursue for an entire career.
Yeah. So it wasn't until I was about 16. So at 16, I'd like I said, I'd been involved in local productions, and I was part of a youth theatre, and I'd done my drama GCSE, and I was sort of on the cusp of deciding what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I wanted to be a lawyer. And that was sort of the feeling that I'd had throughout the whole of secondary school. I'd wanted to do something like that, lawyer, doctor, even though I'm not very good with the sciences, but something like that. And I was talking to my drama teacher, and he was like, "That's great, be a lawyer, but don't, you know, forget your that you enjoy acting, you enjoy singing, so, you know, keep it up." So when I decided to do my A-levels, alongside it, I did a BTEC in performing arts because I just enjoyed it and I loved it, and it was great, and I really got on with my teachers. And it got to the end of my A-levels, or when I was applying for university, and my drama teacher said to me, "Just apply for drama school, see what happens. You enjoy it, you love it. Go and see. You know, you might not even get in, but at least you can say that you tried it out." And I applied to Mount View and I got in, which was surprising, but also surprising in a way that I didn't know how happy I'd be to get in.
Right.
I thought, if I got in, yeah, cool, I got in, now I'm going to go do the law thing. And if I didn't get in, oh, well, you know, whatever. But I was really chuffed. I was really, really happy. So I decided that, you know, while I'm young and fit, that I'd go to drama school and see if I enjoyed it and see if it was something that I wanted to do. And then after that, if it wasn't for me, I'd go back and do the law, because the law's always going to be there. And then at drama school, it was interesting. The first year, you know, like you said, there are so many people who dream about going to drama school and dream about acting for, you know, from the moment they can speak, they're like, "I want to be an actor, I want to be a performer."
Yeah.
And there were so many big personalities in my year at drama school that it was a bit overwhelming to go and be like, "Yeah, I really enjoy doing this. I love performing, I love singing, I love dancing, I love acting. But it's not the world to me. It's not the be all and end all to me." And it was a bit like, maybe I'm not supposed to be here. Maybe you have to have that
obsession,
desire to be able to do this. So not only was I wasn't sure if it was for me, but also I wasn't sure if I'd be accepted into this, you know, world, because it's funny you say that
because we've only met a few times, but every time I have met you, I've always thought you're the least show, well, one of the least showbiz people I've ever met. And obviously you're doing so incredibly well in the business, but it's just always interested me how you're not really about kind of pushing your way to the front and being the focus of a conversation or anything like that.
But I think that's the side of it that sort of scares me a little bit.
And is that the side of it that made you think, maybe I want to do something else? Because that's not for me.
Exactly.
But I can sing, I can act, I can move, but, you know.
Because the performing thing is where I'm most comfortable. The doing interviews kind of thing and sort of like being myself in this industry is what sort of holds me back a little bit. And, you know, in an office job or something like that, you can just keep yourself to yourself. You don't have to sort of be showy in any way.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm comfortable doing that. So it's sort of taken me a while to sort of get comfortable being me in this industry.
And has, I mean, we'll go back a little bit again to the journey, but has becoming more successful made that more difficult? Because now people like me do what hey, Tyrone, can we do an interview? Is that more difficult anyway? And, you know, you've got to smile on the red carpet and the Olivier's and things like that. Is that tough? I mean, I think, I'll be honest, I think I'd find that tough.
Yeah, I think anyone would, because it's exposing. It's, you know, you're on the stage, you're playing a part. And you've got the sort of, you know, if people don't like what you're doing, oh, you know, the director told me to do this, or the song's that the song.
You can
like,
hide
you
behind can't, the character yeah, exactly, or the performance. Exactly. Yeah.
But when you're on the red carpet, it's just you and whether you look good in your tux and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, what's he on about when he's doing that interview? Why did he say that? No one cares about that. But having had the experience of, you know, doing Jesus Christ Superstar and people wanting to talk to me about my life and stuff. I've done a few interviews and I've met people in the industry who want to talk to me about certain things, and you sort of get used to it, but yeah. That's the thing, you get used to it, but it never becomes
normal
yeah. or easy.
It's funny, Julie Atherton sat exactly where you yeah. are when we did yeah. her interview for this podcast, and yeah. she said the same. She just yeah. thinks it's really odd that people want to know about
yeah.
her.
Yeah, it's strange,
I think
yeah.
my point is that my kind of ambition for this series is that I want to put the spotlight on real actors and yeah. people who really, really want to do this. Yeah. I think far too often in this business, we want to focus on people who are maybe celebrities or
yeah. Yeah.
they've got the spotlight on them for maybe the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
My ambition yeah. is to put the spotlight on mm-hmm. people. When I was growing up, you know, people like Ruthie Henshaw, Michael mm-hmm. Ball, John mm-hmm. Barrowman, these, yeah. these were really celebrated
yeah.
people
yeah, yeah,
and they
absolutely.
Really, really were seasoned jobbing actors mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and I feel like the spotlight slightly strayed onto yeah. other people who maybe aren't actually
yeah.
as focused on the work
yeah
and so that's kind of my ambition for this yeah. series, is to want to talk to people who are actually doing it for a job mm-hmm. and not
and I think there's, you know, times are changing, like we were talking about earlier. Obviously in theatre you have to have something that draws an audience
mm.
and that's when producers have to think really, you know, carefully about who they cast with regards to, you know, we want people to see this show, so we have to cast mm-hmm. people who people want to see
mm.
and sometimes they have to go down the, you know, celebrity mm-hmm. route. They might not have a route in performing or singing or dancing or whatever mm-hmm. and sometimes it really, really works and mm-hmm. sometimes it doesn't. But I think now the times are changing a little bit where, you know, with people like Charlie Stemp, for example,
mm-hmm.
who's now on Broadway mm. in Hello Dolly, he's just your average Joe, you know.
That's been quite fascinating to watch,
yeah.
hasn't it? Because
yeah.
they've just made him a star.
Exactly.
They've just created
exactly.
a star.
But that's what used to happen back in the day. Mm. And I think that's becoming more popular these days mm. as well. And, you know, there's always going to be the thing of, you know, we have to have someone that's going to pull the audience in. We have mm. to, because at the end of the day, without those people, these shows wouldn't survive
mm.
and more people would be out of work, more actors would be out of work. So I support it in that respect, but I think there should be an equal, you know, on the other side of it, really promoting mm. these people who have worked.
Well, it works in both ways. I mean, you know, again, we'll talk about all of this later, but,
yeah.
you know, Amber Riley and Dreamgirls,
yeah.
which
yeah.
you were obviously in,
yeah.
you know, that's celebrity casting,
absolutely.
But it's also
but
fantastic.
For so the right reasons,
yeah.
exactly. Like, she mm. was absolutely phenomenal
mm.
in the show. And, you know, before we started, people were just like, oh, she's just got the girl from Glee. Of course
mm.
they weren't, like, you know. But, you
no,
know,
she
look
was
what
phenomenal.
Happened. She was absolutely
yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And
mm.
people came to see the show to see her and left loving the show.
Yes.
And that was great. And it was the same when I, you know, I worked with Matt Cardle on X Factor, Memphis, who was from
yeah.
The X Factor, and people
mm-hmm.
were like, oh, he's just, you know, getting someone from The X Factor.
Mm.
He was absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it really, really pays off.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's great as well, because
mm-hmm.
now, you know, they've got, you know, that's the start of their career in performing
uh-huh.
arts. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
everybody starts in different
and
places.
Beverly Knight as well,
Beverly
of course,
Knight.
Another
think,
one, yeah.
Yeah, Beverly Knight
yeah.
was absolutely incredible
mm-hmm.
in that show. And, you know, I've got so many friends as well who didn't train as actors or you know, singers
mm-hmm.
who are doing phenomenally well, incredibly
mm-hmm.
well. Rachel John, Cillian Donnelly, who
mm-hmm.
are, you know, at the top of their game and
mm-hmm.
have learned on the job, sort of work. So it's not all about having a route in performing
yeah.
arts. You find yourself in this world, and it, as long as you work hard at it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you've got to have the, you know, the talent as well. But it's not all about, you know, I trained here and I
uh-huh.
you know, I must have this role because I, you know, I'm a trained actor. It's it's finding the right person for the role. And and these days you have to take into account that includes being able to pull in an audience as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And in many ways you might find yourself the subject of that kind of a thing in the future, because for something like Angry, for
yeah,
example,
yeah, yeah.
That's not to say that anyone else should
yeah,
have played
yeah,
the role, but
yeah.
for the smaller space
yeah,
in Southwark,
yeah.
to get you at this point, which
mm-hmm,
is a really
mm-hmm.
great time for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was a bit of a coup for them.
Absolutely, yeah. And they did sort of, you know, on Twitter and stuff, it was always Olivier nominated
yeah, yeah.
Tyrone Huntley, which is so embarrassing and I hate it.
Mm.
But, you know.
Why is it embarrassing?
It's
just out of interest. I think I know why, but I'm interested to hear why.
I don't know. I think, you know, I'm incredibly proud
mm.
of the achievements that I've had over the last couple of years that have, you know, stemmed from Jesus Christ Superstar. But I think now that that's over, you know, I'm never doing Jesus Christ Superstar again. That's done. I feel like, okay, it's sort of like selling me off achievements that I've done. Whereas, you know, it's just that thing of there's the expectation. If you're selling me as an Olivier nominee, people are going to come and expect perfection or expect.
So you feel like it's an added pressure, or
it's an added pressure. And every show is completely different. So yeah, I might have been good in Jesus Christ Superstar. Who knows what I'm going to be? Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. So, but I think that's very much you putting something on yourself. I think you would say, for example, having seen, maybe I'm wrong, I'm putting words in your mouth, but having seen someone's fantastic performance in something that they wouldn't Olivier for, you wouldn't then go, oh, stop going on about that Olivier. You'd go, do you know what? No one can take that Olivier away from you. What a fantastic thing. So I think, but I totally get it. I think if people prefixed my name with Olivier Award nominee or Olivier Award winner, I'd start to think, oh, I'm more than an award. I'm actually...
But there's that as well, And I think it's just trying to... whenever you start a new show or a new job, you're essentially starting from scratch. Nobody, even if you've done an incredible audition, once you get into that rehearsal room, all your, you know... previous accolades or whatever, they don't mean anything.
Does that saying, you're only as good as your last job?
Exactly. You're starting from scratch. And not everything's gonna live up to the hype of Olivier Awards or whatever.
That's so true. It's a bit of a curse in a way,
but it's like I said, I'm so proud and grateful to have had those just acknowledgements of, you know, you're doing good, you're all right. But it's just a little bit embarrassing. It just makes me cringe a little bit.
But you're quite a cringer, Tyrone. In our short time together, I'm realising. So we've gone off on a fantastic tangent, but I do want to go back to training, big personalities.
Yeah.
And you, still at this point, weren't entirely sure whether you weren't going to be a lawyer when you were training.
So... like I said, drama school for the first year especially was difficult just because I just felt like I didn't belong there. But with the guidance of incredible tutors that I had there, Sam Spencer Lane, and a wonderful acting teacher, Jackie Somerville, they really pushed me to, you know, accept this is for you. You are good at this and you enjoy this. Don't let sort of the external factors affect your enjoyment of it. So as I went through drama school, I did sort of regain that passion for it and think, no, I love being on the stage, and it's something that I do want to give it a go. So in third year, we had our third year shows and agents came to see it and we did showcase, and I signed with an agent, and I started auditioning before I'd left drama school. And by some, you know, luck or fate, I booked my first job in Sister Act, which was the UK tour in 2011/12
with Julie,
who is just hilarious and brilliant,
and that small, not very well known actress Cynthia Erivo, right?
Who? I'm about to sort of go against what I just said, but the multiple award winning, Grammy, Emmy, Tony award winning Cynthia Erivo. It was incredible, and I got to work with so many incredible people, talented people, made some, you know, really, really. Some friends, some people who I, you know.
And at that moment, so you're doing Sister Act. It was a really big show at the time. It had just been at the Palladium, and then it goes on tour. Was that a moment where you kind of go, okay, this is what I should be doing, and I do kind of want to do this?
Yeah, I think I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the people. And I was actually working with a couple of people from that I trained with as well, which was really cool. So we made that journey together, which was nice. And I was having fun and I enjoyed it. But I still felt like there was something not missing, but I just felt like something was sort of calling me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd spent the most part of my life wanting to be a lawyer or something similar. And I was like, yeah, I'm enjoying this, but...
What do you think it was about lawyer specifically? Because was that something about... I mean, I don't know, you'll tell me, but... Because there's such an... When you say lawyer or doctor, which was the two things that you picked up on, excuse me, there's something about those job titles which are so respected.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's something about them. They have a status about them.
I think that's it.
So was it that you wanted to be looked at in that way? Or
also on a personal thing. You know, I had a group of friends that I close friends when I was growing up at school, and there was sort of this rivalry within us, you know, who gets the best grades, who gets the A star, who gets this. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed working hard to get good grades. And those jobs called for good grades, a strong work ethic. And I enjoyed having those qualities, and I enjoyed people seeing me as being that guy that works hard and gets good grades. And those jobs were sort of the epitome of that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, and then on the other side, being in musical theatre, people look at you. Oh,
yeah,
you're just dancing around on stage, just singing a little bit. Well, you know,
it's not a real job.
It's not a real job. You're just prancing around. So, whilst I was really, really enjoying it, again, there was that thing in my head that, gosh, I need to do something that sort of calls for a certain level of respect or whatever. I don't know.
That's so interesting. That's really, really interesting. And was that just about your friends and comparing grades, or was that something about family as well?
I guess it was about family, but not like I remember growing up, my dad was very much like encouraging me to get good grades and learning, you know, especially as a young black man as well. You know, being taken seriously and having the same opportunities as everyone else. I was very lucky. Like I didn't growing up experience racism or being excluded in any way. But, you know, obviously my dad, who grew up in the 60s and 70s, it was very, very different. So he wanted me to be not just on an equal level to everyone else, but, you know, get to the next level. So they had to take you seriously. That said, it was never done in a, you must be a lawyer, you must be a doctor, because my brothers weren't very into the academics at all, and that was fine. But I enjoyed being pushed at school. I loved it. I loved going to school. People like, you know, grow up, it's like, I hate working, I hate doing essays. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So yeah, it was sort of getting back to that as well. I liked writing essays. I liked handing it in and seeing what the teacher thought.
So you were in Sister Act, and you still feel like there's something not that you're still not 100% sure about. And then I know you went into the Book of Mormon as well.
Yes.
And it was during this time that you thought, okay, well, I'm going to see what that little itch is, what that thing is. And you started doing a course.
Yeah. So when I was in the Book of Mormon, when you're doing a show, you go to work at 6 and finish at 10. So essentially you've got, apart from matinee days, you've got a 4-hour working day. And I was like, what can, and because now I was living in London on tour, it's a little bit different. You're sort of living out of a suitcase and you're going to different places. So you're doing touristy things and you're meeting up with the rest of the company and stuff. But when you're in London, and it was my first time working in London, I was just at home all day doing nothing, watching telly and not really doing anything with my life, and then going to work and then coming home. And I thought, there must be something else I can do with my time. So I did a graduate diploma in law, which is essentially a law degree that you do. I did it over 2 years, which definitely took up all the rest of my time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was self-taught to some degree. So a lot of the time it was just reading all the books and doing lots and lots of essays that I'd send, you know, online to my tutors and stuff. It was so hard, but it was fulfilling. Mm-hmm. It gave me that.
Well, for someone who loves writing essays and getting the feedback.
And part of me was like, maybe this is something that I want to do. I want to go off into the law. You know, I've done the performing thing. I know I can do it. That's fine. I can leave that. I can rest that now and go and do the law thing. But it sort of had the opposite effect in that it made me think, because I passed, you know, I've got that diploma now. It's on my wall. I got a distinction. I worked really, really hard. And it took, you know, it was two of the most difficult years of my life. But it's that thing of, I've done that now. I know I can do it. If I ever wanted to, I could go and do it. But performing has become my passion, and I wonder if that was
what was important to know that you could
absolutely. It was saying I can pass these exams, I can do these essays, I can be respected by the teachers and people in that industry who are saying, oh my God, you're made to be a lawyer, you need to come and do this, and you've got a theatrical background as well, that'd be great in court and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you must do this. It's like, yeah. And I could, but I don't want to. I want to do the acting thing.
And weirdly, it was around that time, kind of once you'd let that go almost.
Absolutely.
That things really started to have a massive change for you.
So towards the end, so I actually did my final exams whilst I was doing Memphis, which was my first principal role in the West End. And I absolutely loved that job. Mm. And I, again, met so many incredible people who I now call friends. And everything sort of came together. And I think that might have been, you know, previously I was holding part of myself back because I felt like I didn't belong. Mm. But having done the law thing and got that out of the way and out of my system, I was able to fully commit to this acting thing. Mm. And I absolutely feel like I belong.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, that's good. That's nice to hear. Yeah. A lot of people, when you then did do Jesus Christ Superstar, were kind of referring to you as this like overnight success. And obviously people can hear just from our interview today that obviously you put an incredible amount of groundwork in, not only in theatre, but actually in other industries as well. So by the time this part came to you, you were ready for it.
I think what was strange about Jesus Christ Superstar is, yes, people did think it was an overnight thing, but also it was just so far removed from anything that I'd ever done before and such a big role in comparison to the things that I've done before. Mm. You know, in Memphis, I was playing a mute. I had very few lines and one solo song. In Mormon, I was in the ensemble. In Sister Act, I had, you know, I was part of a trio. And like Judas as a role is just epic.
Well, in many ways, he's the lead.
He's the lead, and you know, along with Jesus, and you know, he has these massive songs. And it was the first time I'd ever been on my own, apart from the band, on my own on stage with no one else there, and having to sort of hold it. So it was completely different. So it sort of was a little bit overnight, and also the fact that, you know, I wasn't actually meant to be playing Judas at all in that production. I was actually cast as in another role. And it was only when the person they cast as Judas couldn't do the show that they...
I had no idea about that.
Did you not?
No.
So, originally I was cast another role, and it got to a few weeks before rehearsals, and the guy that they cast as Judas had to pull out, and they sort of didn't have any other option but to, to cast me.
Well, it worked out quite well for them.
Yeah.
What was that like at the time?
Petrifying, absolutely petrifying. Because I'd auditioned for Judas originally, and even when I was auditioning, I was like, "This is not for me. This, I could not do this." And when they cast me in the other role, I was like, "Yeah, this role I can do." Even that role was challenging, but I was like, "That I can do." Uh-huh. So when they called me back to re-audition for Judas, I was like, "I can't do this." And it took my agent saying, "Just go, see what happens. You never know." And luckily it worked out
very well,
but it felt overnight for other people. It felt overnight to me. I didn't think I was ready at all.
Wow.
And the first year we did it, you know, I spent a lot of time with Tim Sheeda, the director. You know, he was director slash agony uncle, sort of give it, you know, he was constantly just trying to, you know, every day, you can do this, you can do this.
And what was it specifically? I mean, I guess maybe this is an obvious question, maybe it was just the size of the role, but what was it specifically that you thought you couldn't do?
I think vocally it's incredibly demanding, and even having done it twice, the thought of ever having to do it ever again is petrifying because, you know, it's vocal stamina. And especially because, you know, I've done shows where I was singing one song and people are like, oh God, we love that song. You sounded great in that song. And then having to do that for so many more songs in Jesus Christ Superstar, it's like, well, I can do it for one song. I don't know if I can sustain it for a whole show. So it was a lot of pressure. And like I said, exposing, I was on the stage on my own for the first time. So it was just nerve wracking. And also there's that thing of, you know, when you're replacing someone, it's like, well, you know, you're not the first choice, you know, they'd rather have someone else, this other person doing it. So it's having to prove yourself as well. But also there's been so many incredible performances of Judas in the past on film, on Broadway, in London. It's sort of just like, are people just going to come and think, oh, he's not as good as blah, blah, blah. So it was just a lot of pressure.
And you mentioned that, you did so for those people who don't know, you did the show twice, both times at Regent's Park. There was a huge fuss made of it the first time, practically sold out. Then they brought it back for the second year. Was it in between that that you were nominated for the Olivier?
Yes.
Okay, so you come back. Is that an added pressure to go into the role that people go, oh, he was nominated for an Olivier for this? It should be really good.
Oh my goodness, it's terrifying because people, you know, especially people who hadn't seen it the first year were coming again, expecting excellence. It's been, you know, I was nominated for Olivier. The show won Best Musical Revival. It won Best Musical at the Evening Standard Awards. People were coming to see, you know, the show that was incredible. So there was absolutely added pressure. But at the same time, I knew I could do it. I'd done it before. And so it was that balance of, yeah, there's a lot more pressure this time, but at the same time, I know I can do it. And people enjoyed it the last time. So, you know, what I was doing worked. So it's just trying to tap into that again.
And like you said, it's such a huge role, isn't it?
It's absolutely
massive. It's epic. One of those iconic roles as well in terms of musical theatre.
It's, you know, I remember at drama school, you know, Heaven on Their Minds and Gethsemane being part of, you know, everyone's rep, everyone's seeing song presentation classes and all that kind of stuff. It was, there were, you know, it was a big deal, you know, musical theatre history. So that was an added pressure as well. And people, but what was amazing is that people were coming who'd seen the original production in London, coming to our production and saying, that was better than the original, or that was equal to, or wow, we haven't seen a production of this, of Jesus Christ Superstar that was so good in such a long time. It was great. And again, that was confidence boosting. So,
And what would you like to kind of happen next? Obviously for now, you're really happy kind of, going back to basics. More acting based, smaller, more challenging spaces where you really have to kind of, you can't rely on the set or the huge, you know, you're relying on your skill. But what would you like to kind of see? We know you're not going to go into a courtroom anytime soon. So what would you like to see happen next?
I think I want to use these experiences in small theatres doing, you know, plays without music, trying to hone my skills as an actor, working with people who, you know, different types of people. A lot of people I work with on musical theatre have just done musical theatre, you know, come from a very dance background or singing background. And it's just, it's so different to work with people who have never done that kind of thing. Or musicians. Obviously, I've worked with musicians before in the orchestra and bands that I've... Would I do an album?
I think a lot of people would quite like that from you.
I think it's an option that's out there. I actually have had talks with my agent about potentially doing something like that, recording some things, but recorded media is not something that I'm 100% comfortable with yet. And I don't know whether that's a confidence
thing. In terms of TV as well.
Yeah, it's not something that I'm desperate to do. But it's something that I'm exploring. Like, I quite like that, though, because
you know, so many people in theatre are, really, they're just waiting to get their TV break. But I like someone who's like, no, actually, I really like theatre. I'm kind of happy here.
That said, like we were talking about earlier, there is the thing now where a lot of people are getting their break into musical theatre via TV.
So film, it does kind of support.
So it's bit, yeah. So if I, you know, I would never turn down a TV job or a film job because it may well sort of support me
in other areas,
you know, further, know, they might be able to sell a show, come and see Tyrone Huntley from blah blah blah,
from Hollyoaks
so
but for now you are at the Watermill. How long are you there for?
We're there until the 16th of June. Okay. So 10th of May, right. 16th of June.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, I hope it goes well.
Thank you very
and
much.
And if people want to follow you or get in touch with you, obviously they can follow you on the Stage Door app, but
yes,
social media?
Yes, I'm on Twitter, Tyrone Huntley.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Instagram, Tyrone.Huntley. Very annoying, Tyrone Huntley was taken. but I mean, I'm not a massive social media person, but...
What? That really surprises me after everything you've said.
But saying that, occasionally I come out with some brilliant tweets. You definitely need to follow me on Twitter.
I'm following you now.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for today, Tyrone. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bye.